Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, this is Kai. We've got a bonus episode for you because as of this week, New York State has a new governor. Kathy Hochul has just been sworn in as the first woman in the governor's office. Andrew Cuomo resigned after a state attorney general's investigation found he sexually harassed 11 women, many of them young women who were working for him. Cuomo is a massive figure and personality, but this whole saga in New York politics is about a lot more than him. And his whole decade-long tenure as governor offers a study in a particular kind of gendered leadership. So I sat down with someone who has long been one of his most vocal critics and who challenged him in the Democratic primary back in 2014. Zephyr Teachout is a professor at Fordham University Law School and is actually a specialist in corruption. She wrote an essay way back in March in The Nation magazine calling on Cuomo to resign. We talked about why. Our conversation is coming right up. This is the United States of Anxiety, a show about the unfinished business of our history and its grip on our future.
An entire nation of desperate libs and media figures is throwing themselves at the New York governor in an embarrassing way.
Cuomo-sexual.
When Cuomo's on, I'm like, got to go see my celebrity crush right now, sorry.
You're going to be held accountable for what happens in ways that your brother just can't do it.
We are here. Outside. Outside.
These women have the courage to speak up, not just for themselves.
I did nothing wrong, and period. And I'm not resigning, and I'm doing my job every day.
The independent investigation has concluded that Governor Andrew Cuomo sexually harassed multiple women.
My resignation will be effective in 14 days.
Zephyr, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So this past spring, you wrote an editorial in The Nation magazine arguing for Cuomo to resign, and you described him as, quote, petty, controlling, and grandiose. Even worse, he equates bullying with competence. And I am particularly interested in that last point, this mixing up of bullying and competence. What did you mean by that?
Well, there's this story about Andrew Cuomo, pushed by himself, but really that was supported for years by the press, that he is kind of a jerk, or you might use more vulgar terms, but he's our jerk, and he uses it to get things done. That's kind of an expression. He's competent. And I think it's one of the sort of biggest false stories about Andrew Cuomo is because when you actually look at his record as governor, he's good at getting things done, if you think of getting things done as aligning people to his political needs. Mm. But when it comes to the traditional work of governance, like literally building bridges that don't fall down or don't have safety issues, building infrastructure, fully funding schools, the governance work that people largely really want, he's actually been pretty terrible. Mm. So there is a way in which he has built up the idea that being a jerk, being a bully, actually means that you're competent. And that's just false. And it's a really dangerous narrative and framework. And I think it's one that we far too often fall into, and it's very tied into certain ideas about masculinity. The sort of tough guy who maybe a little gruff around the edges, but at least he accomplishes things. And the real story is that he is somebody who accomplishes his own power, but not the work of governing.
What do you think is appealing about, because so when, as he has tried to sort of defend himself over the past couple of weeks, we've heard him sort of repeatedly appeal to this idea that we're familiar with him and his style, that we know him already, yeah. And by implication, we love him already. And the thing is that that is true for a lot of people. A lot of people are really drawn to that idea of his bullying makes him competent. And so what is it about that style of leadership that you think is so appealing to so many people?
Well, I'll take a little bit of issue with that.
Okay.
I think it's important to remember how Andrew Cuomo came to power in the first place, which is that he very much was elected on his father's reputation. And you don't have to trust me on that. If you look at his own speeches, even his acceptance speech of winning the governorship in 2010, it was riddled through with references to his father. And when I ran against him in 2014, that's what I ran into everywhere, is that people had a deep love of Cuomo. And there was a kind of blurring of the lines between Mario and Andrew Cuomo. And frankly, I had felt that too. When he was elected in 2010, I thought, ah, my, you know, childhood hero who had stood up against the death penalty. Mm-hmm. But that, of course, wasn't Andrew. That was Mario.
Mm-hmm.
So that he came into power with a false sense of people knowing him. They felt like they knew him because they knew his father. And he, of course, believed he learned from his father, who failed to get a fourth term, something that Andrew Cuomo has as well, that you've got to be tougher. He thought his father probably was too soft in some areas. So there's a little bit of history that I think is important to fill in there.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I do think there's also an attraction to somebody else will take care of this for me. There's a attraction to the, very literally, the strong man leadership. And it's really important to understand that what appears as strength is really kind of a banal, banal run-of-the-mill, self-centered guy with a little too much, with way too much power, not just a little too much power.
I'm talking with Fordham University law professor Zephyr Teachout, who challenged Governor Andrew Cuomo back in the 2014 Democratic primary and who ran for Congress in 2016, about what we should take from the conflation of bullying and competence that is such a part of Andrew Cuomo's legacy. And before we take a break, when the governor announced his resignation, our intern, Gigi Polizzi, grabbed a mic and hit the streets to just see what people were saying about him. We were curious just how prevalent the whole Cuomo sexual thing really was, which, not to out Gigi or anything, but she kind of had a tinge of it herself. Anyway, here is some of what she heard.
So we know now that he's resigned.
Yeah.
Yeah, as of literally like 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
But March, like a year and a half ago, he was a source for comfort for a lot of people. He was kind of like leading the nation and stepping into the space where our president wasn't in terms of giving us daily updates. What was your relationship to him in March or April of 2020?
Honestly, I saw him as kind of like a meme. Like, people were making all those jokes about like Daddy Cuomo's gonna like take care of us and make it okay and all that. And I think a lot of people like, so I hate this phrase because it's overused, but like saw him as like the adult in the room.
Were you watching him?
Yeah, once in a while I used to watch him, like the numbers and see like the vaccinations. I think just checking like once in a while.
He talked a lot about his mother at the beginning. He talked a lot about his daughters. There was a comfort to turning on the TV and hearing a familiar voice and feeling safe and feeling like we were protected.
He was good though.
So you did tune into him?
Yeah, I think he was every time in the TV. I'm sure. I don't know much about it, you know.
I remember always seeing him on, I think, CNN. My mom would always have it on, and I don't know. I like, admired him. I liked him.
His brother's on CNN.
Oh, his brother's the one that's on CNN.
Yeah. Yeah, his brother's a reporter, but he would, yeah, give daily press briefings, so it was probably covered by CNN.
Yeah. Okay, that's when I learned the phrase Cuomosexual.
What is your understanding of homosexual?
Just people that, I think he's like one of those politicians that people just think are like a JFK. Like, he's charming, you know?
Everybody was like, Daddy Cuomo.
Where do you think that sort of like daddy figure came from? Like, what do you think it was about the way that he was leading that prescribed that title or that feeling?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely did seem like he was kind of had control of things. He put out a really confident front. And also part of it was like those weird PowerPoints he was making.
I had never seen him speak before. I just was aware he had a positive approval rating. I didn't know what he looked like until like this week.
Really?
Yeah.
He resigned about 2 hours
ago. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, to be honest, I thought he stepped down already.
Even back then, I'd never agreed with his policies, and at the end of the day, I didn't trust him.
After the whole nursing home thing and such, I lost trust.
I don't know. I'm pretty out of the loop, but the less creepy folks in leadership positions, the better, because it sets an example for everyone, right?
We'll be right back with more.
What if millions of Black Americans had been compensated for slavery? Join me, Trymaine Lee, as I explore the untold story of one of the only Black Americans who ever was. I talk to his descendants and discuss how reparations forever changed their family's trajectory and imagine a reality where reparations are paid to the rest of Black America. Into America presents Uncounted Millions, The Power of Reparations, a Black History Month series. New episodes drop Thursdays. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is the United States of Anxiety. I'm Kai Wright. I'm talking with Zephyr Teachout, who challenged Governor Andrew Cuomo in the 2014 Democratic primary, and thus was kind of on the receiving end of his infamous political aggression and bullying. And Zephyr, I wonder about if we can talk about that campaign for a minute. What was that like, setting aside your deep policy disputes with him, as you considered running against him, how did you process that already famous, aggressive political style of his?
Well, before I announced, having talked to people, I was frankly scared about what he would do to me. I remember thinking, okay, well, how can he affect my career, you know? And it was really striking that almost anybody you talk to would have a kind of warning, like before you stand up to him, you know, be scared. Mm. And that fear was everywhere. After I announced, it was almost comic. I would talk to some lawmakers who privately supported me, but would physically move away when we were in public.
Oh, wow.
There was one senator who said that every time he spoke to me, he'd get a call from Andrew Cuomo's close associate, Joe Prococo, who is now in prison for federal bribery, saying, "What are you doing?" And that it was like there were spies everywhere watching proximity. A lawmaker who stood next to me at a fair got a lot of attention just for standing near my sign. I mean, the level of fear was...
What do you make of that?
Well, one of the things that I think is really important to understand is that Andrew Cuomo is a bully, but he had the governorship of New York, which has a grotesque amount of power. One political scientist concluded that New York was, if not the most, one of the two most executive branch concentrated states. And so let's just talk about what that means. What that means is if that state senator gets in Cuomo's bad graces, that region of the state may get less funding. I mean, it's a real brass tacks form of revenge. And yes, people were worried about their own careers, but they were also worried about their constituents because the governor has so much power over the budget. So there was a combination of actual power and a culture of fear, mm-hmm. and they both reinforced each other. Now, Andrew Cuomo didn't actually acknowledge my existence. He refused to shake my hand. He absolutely refused to say my name to the point where my running mate said it was like Voldemort. You know, if he dared say my name, something terrible would happen. He refused to debate me, saying debates were a disservice to democracy. And he set up a new political party in New York called the Women's Equality Party, designed to support him, to show just what a champion of women he was, lest people choose to have a female governor instead of him. So at first, frankly, it is scary. And the ambience of fear, even when it's not clear, I did two things. I sort of thought, well, how can he actually hurt me? He can't. Mm-hmm. And second, the stakes are too high, you know.
In the report issued by Attorney General Letitia James's office, the investigators explicitly linked this kind of behavior to the allegations of sexual harassment. And you did the same in your editorial asking for him to resign in the spring. How are they connected in your mind? Can you do that math for people?
Well, abusing your state employees, sexually harassing them, sticking your hand up someone's shirt. These are gross abuses of power. And when Andrew Cuomo harassed and assaulted his staffers, he knew and they knew that if they spoke out, the full power of the state could be used to try to destroy their careers. And he had 10 years of history of everybody knowing that he would, in fact, act on those latent threats. And there's actually really interesting psychological recent research on this kind of abuse of power and how they're connected. I mean, we've known for millennia that power corrupts. But there have been some psych experiments recently that find that if you, in a highly stylized environment, give some people more power and other people less, the people with more power not only care less about the others, they lose the compassionate, empathetic capacity. They actually lose the ability to read other people's facial expressions, to hear what they want, and are far more likely to touch people inappropriately. Wow. So there's a clear connection between too much power and sexual abuse and abuse of the office.
And I hear you also saying just in all kinds of corruption in our minds, if we kind of become sociopaths if we have too much power.
We do. There's this wonderful a researcher who said it's as if you've had a traumatic brain injury that affects the empathetic network when you're given too much power. And so when we think about what to learn from Andrew Cuomo, I think there is a temptation to ask just about Andrew Cuomo himself, the person. But it's also important to step back and look at the structures of power and say, how can we make sure that no one is ever in a position where when they threaten retaliation, they are in a position to follow through on that threat? This is just ancient wisdom that we should apply nowadays. Don't allow people to have so much power, as opposed to another response, which is to say, let's look for another hero, another person who can play the hero role. It's, you know, hey, let's have a balance of power
and make sure that
people are accountable.
What about that hero role? Because I also think that's part of this story. You know, I mean, we have to talk about the quote, Cuomo sexual craze of last year. And, you know, his daily COVID briefings, you know, were really taken as this counterpoint to Donald Trump's leadership. But they felt like very similar performances to me when I was watching them. Honestly, this sort of idea of it's me and me alone on this wall that's protecting you. And I mean, what do you think made those briefings such a big hit culturally?
I mean, there's such a hunger for just being released from the responsibility of governing our own lives. And last year, the level of anxiety and also profound loneliness was at a real peak. People were understandably scared and deeply alone. And if the counterpoint to grotesque abuses of power is to build systems where communities come together and say, what should we do? Not, you know, what hero can lead me? Then you had a moment where that kind of small d democratic communal activity was frankly really hard.
Yeah.
It was hard to have, you know, whether it's Tuesday nights or once a month, or even the politics that you do when you run into a neighbor at a grocery store and work things out and say, hey, maybe I'll call my assembly member. All of those little moments of interaction were gone. And so you have atomization and isolation and loneliness. And at that moment, I think there's a deep vulnerability in all of us to say, hey, can't somebody just do all the work? Because I can't see the we at this moment. I can't feel the we that can govern ourselves.
I wonder what you think all of this means for women who run for office, if it means anything. This idea of a certain kind of masculinity and macho-ness and bullying. Do you think that women have to perform this same macho act to be viable leaders in the U.S., and do you see that happening?
I think we're in a moment of real change on that. And, I mean, I know when I ran in 2014, I had all these questions about, you know, here I am, a law professor with a funny name, no resources. And so you naturally, questions of performance come to mind, like, well, what do I wear, and what archetype? How will I make sense to people? Basically, and there is a deep traditional tendency, which I think is really changing right now, to say, okay, the model that makes sense is be as close as possible to that 1950s, 1960s white male vision of what a politician looks like. And I think over the last 10 years, we've seen a real change in that. And frankly, that's a big deal for men as well. You see people with tattoos, you know, it's no longer Ken doll. Mortgages and credit card debt and different hair. And that, to me, is something to really be celebrated. And I think that real flowering of, you know, maybe superficial, like clothing and tattoos and hair, but that actually really means a lot for people being connected to politics. Because then it's not those heroes over there. It's, hey, I also have credit card debt and tattoos and don't wear a button-up suit every day to work.
When you mentioned the credit card debt, I assume you're referring to Stacey Abrams, famously in her 2018 campaign for governor, that her debt, her personal debt, became part of the campaign, and she owned it. She said, yeah, I'm a human being with debt. What do you want? We live in America. And I think about her as a counterpoint to the Cuomo example of effectiveness. You know, so much of her brand is competence and effectiveness without the bullying.
It's she is the counterpoint in so many ways. Also, you know how you go where you're aiming? You know, these sort of idea that if you, if a pilot's looking at a tree, she's going to crash into the tree. But if she's looking at the open field, she'll go to the open field. It is so clear, and we'll just use Stacey Abrams as an example, that what she is aiming for is the public good and a flourishing democracy. And she keeps aiming that way, whatever happens. And it also is so much part of Cuomo's own trajectory, is that he has always been aiming towards himself, you know, towards aggrandizing himself, towards sort of becoming bigger and stronger. And last summer, there was a look in Cuomo's eyes of finally being at the apex, finally being where he wanted to be. And it was about himself. Yeah. It wasn't about the state. And I guess this is what I think I want to underline, is that this kind of, you might talk about it as toxic masculinity or as this masquerade of bullying as competence, it's really banal. it's not interesting. What is interesting is somebody who has the courage to really care about the public. Being self-centered, that isn't interesting. Seeking power, well, people have been doing that for thousands of years. Bullying, well, ask a 5-year-old, they know how to do it. What's hard is having power and having the courage to share it, not gathering it to oneself.
Zephyr Teachout is a law professor at Fordham University. She challenged Governor Andrew Cuomo in the 2014 Democratic primary and ran for Congress in 2016. Back in March, she wrote an early op-ed making the case for Cuomo's resignation, going beyond the sexual harassment charges. You can find a link in our show notes for this episode. Zephyr, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you want to hear more about the relationship between gender and power in politics, we made a whole season of this show about it back in 2018 when we were still a seasonal podcast. It's how we covered that year's midterm elections, and we talked to a ton of women who have held or sought or were then seeking office, like Stacey Abrams in Georgia and Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey and several current and former U.S. senators. Anyway, if you want to check it out, go to wnyc.org/anxiety and look for the Archives tab. Click through and you'll see all of our past seasons, including the one on gender and power. And otherwise, I will talk to you on Sunday. If you have thoughts about this episode or anything else for that matter, send me a voice memo. Just email it to anxiety@wnyc.org. I love getting voice memos there. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.